Blog Talk Radio.
What are those lights in the sky? And why are aliens abducting you? Get answers.
TJ Morris, and this is ET Radio. Welcome to November 1st, 2012. The whole world has changed since yesterday, and so have all my friends. There are thousands of them out there, literally thousands on many Facebooks, if you want to see them, but though it's only the tip of the iceberg, because we are ET Time, Back to the Future, which is timeless. And if you think you know somebody, you may want to reconsider that, because we're all so unique and different, and we each are here for a purpose and a reason, and for that reason, I am here to discuss the future, and I see it as a very limited and unlimited place all at the same time, with many dimensions and many realities. And as we've seen many of my friends discussing densities, we have a category that is sort of paranormal and sort of spirituality. I will swap the tags on Blog Talk Radio, which is our tool, of which we have many. And for now, I have people that like to go with me and follow me on my adventure to see if they have anything similar, and some of us discuss similar interests in our Facebook accounts, and some of us do not. So I have many people that most people that think they know me or have only talked to me in the last few weeks on the radio show, they may think they know something about me, but do they really? Do they really know themselves? And with that said, I'm going to tell you we're going to be discussing full consciousness in a way to open others' minds about sacred geometry and cosmic consciousness tonight. Now, I'm going to give my typical intro, which is for all those out there, they're just awakening to the fact that they may have a soul purpose for being here on this planet. And I have died twice, and I'm working on figuring out the third time. And I, like everybody else, am no different than you, except that my experiences in this time and place and space make me very different. Not only have I died two times, once from hepatitis, having the blood taken out of my body, and the other, placenta previa, when I lost all the blood in my body, having a fourth child, a fourth daughter, and we both died. And I came back with lots of knowledge, watching the stars and the cosmic consciousness passed me by, and I went through the universe, the multiverse, the metaverse, the xenoverse, and the omniverse, five levels of reality. And then the last time, when October 10, 2010, I believe, was the date, I met two gold personages and had to be taken to the hospital, because I wasn't fully comprehending how powerful the world really could be. And I learned about communication tools with these gold personages. And since I have done that, I've come to the conclusion that there is more to life. And spirituality is the category for tonight. We are visible to everyone. Our showtime is Thursday, November 1st at 2000 hours. That's 8 p.m. Central where I am. That's 3 p.m. in Hawaii, 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and 9 p.m. Eastern. And, of course, over in UK, they're 6 hours ahead of us. And we are a global international group we call ACO, short for Ascension Center Organization. I have members in my ACE Folklife Historical Society that are archivists, and we're open to the public. We have a LinkedIn group, ACE Folklife, and we are about art, culture, and education. And my name is Teresa J. Morris, and I have teresajmorris.org. And I also have many, many websites because I come from a background as an investigator. And that's private investigator, legal investigator, and even a government service investigator, contract government. I worked with a lot of engineers, and I've learned a lot in the world and why things are the way they are, at least the way they were taught to me, which is a programming, possibly a culture in my traditions. And I have learned about communication tools and online practicing skills as speechcraft, which I have been asked by others to assist them in their speechcraft while they prepare themselves to share their knowledge and their life stories with the world. And many of my friends, whether they're from a PhD level or master's level or college level in education, they all seem to have one thing in common, other than me as their friend, they wouldn't be on my show, is the fact that they have something to say and share. And so we will be sharing our online practicing skills. I am creating a community of online practicing skills as speechcraft that's called COPS, C-O-P-S. And I'm creating a group for ACO, Associated Consultants, Organizers, for the Ascension Center Enlightenment Classes of the Future. And every night, I'm on 7 nights a week, and I told people I would do that between now and 12/21/12. And then I will be preparing for a conference that I will have once a year in honor of my husband, who is an author of many books, spy novels. He was the one that when President Reagan was shot, they sent a special plane to Germany to pick my husband up and take him to President Ronald Reagan's side so he could find out who shot him, and my husband did. My husband was an excellent investigator for our government, and yet both of us are about sharing our experiences with the world, his in fiction form with mysteries and spy novels, mine with the extraterrestrial world, social paranormal world, and friends that feel like they're driven to come and share their lives with me and get to know me as a speaker for the future of my conferences. And I also have, for those young children that are 13 and above, preferably 18 or above, unless they're cloggers or wanting to go on the television, to share their talents. We're about motivational speaking. And being a radio host and speaker myself, I went through Toastmasters while I work for the government, and I've been to organizations. I've paid thousands of dollars to learn to be here, but I actually did receive my FCC license back when they were with radio, and you couldn't get an FCC license unless you had a radio show, and I did that in Hawaii. So now with that and the information that you may feel like you need, this is November 1st, 2012. We've had plenty of things going on in the world, including, as many of you know, around the world, our east coast of our United States, and Sandy hitting has been very disheartening. However, it's something that we apparently could not control, and Mother Nature has cleansed areas, and it's unfortunate that it's left some people passing over to their next experience. And since I died and came back, I totally believe that. So to all you loved ones that know that you've seen many heroes out there saving their wives and their children and this thing, God bless you and know that there is a life hereafter. And I speak from experience. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on, I've got two people in my queues, and I'm not sure who's who. So if you're there waiting to be on the show, stand by. I just want to introduce people. I'm expecting Paul Burley tonight. Is that you, Paul, on 218, or is that someone else?
Oh, that's me.
And who is me?
This is Paul Burley.
Oh, my Paul. Great.
Yeah,
how are
yeah.
you?
I'm doing very well. Yourself?
Great. Tell me where you're calling from and let everybody, because people listen to us in Germany and Netherlands, Switzerland, places like that. And this is their first introduction, more than likely, to you. Could you tell us a little about yourself, where you're calling from?
Sure. I'm calling from Duluth, Minnesota. Beautiful Duluth, where it's we've already had our first snow this year, so we're setting in for a nice long winter as we usually do up here.
Okay, and okay, we'll get right back to you then. I'll get this other person on. I was looking for area code 626. For some reason, I'm having trouble. Oh, it's the L.A. area. I'm not sure if they want to be on the air or not, but stand by one moment. Let's see here.
TJ.
Area code 626. Hi. Oh.
That's me. Hello, TJ.
Hello. I didn't know you were going to call in tonight. Well, welcome.
I told you I would definitely do my best to get here, and here I am. I'll be here for at least till 7 o'clock, so let's enjoy it while I'm here.
Okay, folks, this is Steve. I'm hoping he's going to be a co-host in training. I like his voice. He took me on as his book publisher, so I guess between he and I, he's going to do a conference helping a friend of ours, Saeed David Farman, over in California. And Steve came on to talk with me about that and his history. And we were discussing his book, and I asked him if he had a publisher, and he said no. So I volunteered, free, of course, because I do that. And it's worked out well for us. He's been on a few other shows to go and promote his book and myself. And I'm real happy, Steve, to have you. I've got a different format for the rest of the world tonight as T.J. Morris, American Culture International Relations. And I'd like to introduce you, Steve, to Paul Burley. He's a friend of mine for at least a year or two or more. I'd have to look back at our Facebook. But he sent me his book, and tonight is a good night for you, Steve, because he's an engineer. And if you don't mind, I'm going to just have you you can help if you stay long enough. I'll let you guys meet each other. And then I'll read his bio, which he graciously sent me. So, Paul, you want to introduce yourself to Steve? You guys talk a second. I'm going to be gearing up your bio
sure.
for everybody.
Sure. Thanks. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Paul.
I'm an engineer and a geologist. I've been in the consulting arena for about 25 years. All of that changed for me beginning in 2003 when I encountered a medicine wheel, a Native American medicine wheel, in the mountains of Wyoming at over an elevation of 10,000 feet. And it was unknown, undocumented for the state of Wyoming at that time, so I wrote up a report just to make sure there's some documentation of it in case Boy Scouts or someone were to come along and decide to start taking the rocks and tearing apart the wheel. But from there, I was wondering about what the who built the wheel, when, what the symbolism of the wheel meant, and so forth. And ultimately, by last September, a year ago September, I wrote a book called The Sacred Sphere that deals with that very medicine wheel over a couple of chapters, but I also discuss the cultures around the world for thousands of years and the symbols, the circular symbols that they've used, and found some very fascinating things based on that research, which took me about 9 years to complete.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
Okay, Steve, now you want to give a little quick bio for you, and then I'm going to read Paul's for for the audience.
Okay, real quick, huh?
Well, you know.
Well, yeah, okay. Let's just say in a nutshell that I was involved with a bunch of alphabet groups, and this caused me to have to reevaluate everything I knew and got me on the path of on the path. So I went from being a military type person, very yang oriented, to a more spiritual service to others type person, and almost monk like. And it's been a major shift in my life, quite a contrast from where I was 20 years ago.
All right, thank you. And I hope Paul's two daughters are listening out there, and all you guys that see his videos. He has several videos on YouTube that are very interesting if you're wanting to learn about sacred geometry. But let me just read this for you. Paul D. Burley is an engineering consultant and environmental geologist who has investigated physical landscapes and historical cultural developments at thousands of sites across North America since 1980. In tandem with his professional services, his particular interests include the history of architecture, engineering, science and technology, and indigenous and ancient religions. Since 2003, he has studied world mythology and the record of graphic and architectural symbolism expressed in secular and spiritual traditions around the world. He has presented professional papers addressing a variety of engineering and environmental concerns, as well as archaeological and ethnographic analysis of previously undocumented traditional limits of Native American tribes and the symbolism found in sacred prehistoric artifacts. He is the author of The Business Owner's Guide to Environmental Site Assessment. His analysis of Native American medicine wheels led him to the study of religious symbolism exhibited by humankind throughout time. His study and interpretation of that symbolism resulted in a new paradigm in the understanding of the sacred life way of indigenous people. His latest book, The Sacred Sphere, was published in September 2011 by Beavers Pond Press. The book explores the many facets of circular pictographic symbols and ancient architecture that have represented sacred relationships between humans, the world, and the cosmos, and the unique geometric structure that unifies all of these symbols. Paul and his wife reside south of Eveleth, Minnesota. Now, his education is as a graduate of the Department of Civil Engineering and the University of Minnesota Duluth. He graduated in 89 from the Department of Geology and University of Minnesota. He has a BS in Geology, University of Minnesota in 87, and a BCA Civil Engineering Geotechnical Emphasis on the University of Minnesota. Now, his professional experience and qualifications include Braun Intertech Corporation and Principal Engineer Scientist Business Unit Manager of Business Unit Manager for Geotechnical, Environmental, and Construction Materials Testing Departments at Hibbing and Duluth, Minnesota offices, and administration of all staffing, project management, business development, and budgeting activities. His qualifications as a Senior Project Manager of Engineering and Environmental Consulting Services at Bloomington, Minnesota office included engineering and design, site characterization in regards to cultural and environmental conditions with environmental site assessment, construction inspection, and material testing and hazardous waste materials. Now, he has a lot more than that, but I think that gives you a pretty good idea that he's highly well-educated, not to mention he's had many publications, papers, presentations. He has all kinds of certificates and associations he belongs to, including the National Society of Professional Engineers and the Association in America of Petroleum Geologists called American Association of Petroleum Geologists. He is a registered environmental assessor, and we could ask for no one other than someone that has teaching experience such as he does with the University of Minnesota Duluth in the Department of Civil Engineering. He's, I guess, the teaching assistant for various classes and courses in engineering, geology, soil mechanics, not to mention physical geology and mineralogy and field camp assessments in Colorado. So that pretty well sums it up for us as far as the paper, I guess one would say, the white paper on Paul Burley. Now we're going to get him to discuss who he is as a human on my show, which is visible to everyone, about spirituality. And now I would like Paul to sort of take over and then give Steve and I a chance to ask questions later if Steve has time to stick around. Know that this is November 1st. We are starting new formats. I will be having more people, more one-on-one, and occasionally I may have Steve or Janet or Tommy on that presently are the only three people I'm recognizing from time to time until such time that they're too busy to help me on my show because they are being who they are in their own life and in their own truth. So, Paul, in your life and with your own truth, I really like to take people back to the time in high school, the first few minutes, if you don't mind. We'd like to just get to know you as a friend. So could you just sort of take us back to your time in high school and why you became an engineer, please?
Well, it would go further back than high school. When I was 6 years old, I remember my dad was cleaning the windows of the back of the house, and I was watching him do that, and he was smoking a corn cob pipe, and at 6 years old, I was wondering what he did for a living, and I asked him, and he said he was an engineer, and from that day on, I decided I was going to be an engineer, so there was no question about that. So by high school, I was taking as much mathematics and physics and chemistry and preparing myself for the engineering curriculum at the University of Minnesota. And dove right into that and came out of there 4 years later with my geotechnical engineering degree. But I've always had an interest in technology and history. My favorite classes in college were a couple of quarters where I studied the history of ancient science and technology, and just found that fascinating. Figured that with a degree in liberal arts along those lines, I probably wouldn't be able to find a good job, so I stuck with engineering. But nonetheless, my heart was in understanding the history of civilizations and their technologies that they used and why they used the technologies that they did and why couldn't they advance faster than they did and so forth. So that was back in my mind throughout my career working as a consultant and had my own company for 14 years out west and really enjoyed that. But one day in 2003, I just took a week's vacation, and a couple of buddies of mine went into the Bighorn Mountains of Wyoming and into the wilderness area, the Cloud Peak Wilderness area, and that's where I found this medicine wheel, and I knew immediately what I had come across, and it was in pristine condition, very good condition, and there were a number of other interesting facets of the site that obviously it was a very sacred site. I didn't know that this medicine wheel was in use as a sacred structure, but a few years later I did discover that it was in use. So, but I was very careful walking around and looking at the various items that showed that it was a certain very sacred site. And have honored that site as being sacred, not just for the Lakota, who, it turns out, I determined constructed that medicine wheel, but it is a sacred site for everyone. And everyone should understand this, that whenever you're at a sacred site, whether it's associated with an ancient culture or an indigenous culture, or if it's a church and a synagogue and so forth, these are sacred sites for everyone. And we need to take care of them as such and respect them as such, because we would expect the same thing of others. So it was very important for me to make sure that I recorded this medicine wheel site as accurately as I could and get a record into the state office so that it could be protected, the state would be aware of it, and could be looking for it over time to make sure it was in good shape. And again, the first time I found it, I didn't know that it was in use, so I was concerned that I may have been the only one to find it, and I was afraid of something happening to it. So that's where all of this started for me.
All right. Well, hold on just a minute, Dan. I've got one other caller, but I don't know if they want to talk or not. I'll ask them. Skype user, would you like to participate, or are you just listening? Hello? That's not Tommy. Is it Cindy? Okay. I think that's just a couple of our regular people. All right. So anyway, Back to the Future is Timeless with Paul Burley. Paul, we heard you say Lakota, and just I'd like to mention that we did have some Dwayne from Lakota Indian Territory in Pine Ridge. Is that the name of it? And I was wondering if you could fill me in a little bit about that before we go on to more about your book. But can you tell me a little bit about what you know about the Lakota and that area?
Well, the as many people are probably aware, the Lakota were the tribe who occupied much of South Dakota, North Dakota, eastern Montana, Wyoming, and into Nebraska in the 1840s and 50s when the wagon trains were moving through, people heading for California. Those trails headed west were going through the Lakota territory. And by the 1870s, we all know about what happened to Custer at the Little Bighorn, and the Lakota were deeply involved in that fight. So they have a long history, a very proud history of protecting the resources that were vital to them in terms of the lifeway that they were living in, which everything that they did day and today were related to the sacred concept of living a lifeway where everything that you did was meant to experience nature and understand the connections that one has with nature and what you can learn from it, because we're all part of one large thing. We're all a part of the universe. And so this was a very sacred area for them to be protecting, because they were relying on all the resources, such as the buffalo, for their livelihood. And here comes the white man and comes through and starts taking the land from them. Of course, there were treaties that were signed that allowing the United States allowing the Native Americans to occupy certain lands. But as many of your listeners may know too, the United States reneged on some treaties, and one of them was regarding the Black Hills, and the United States ended up taking the Black Hills away from the Lakota and putting the Lakota on reservations, for the most part in South Dakota. And since then, the Lakota have been very interested in receiving back the Black Hills, but today, at this point, this still hasn't happened. So they are very proud people. Very strong, very committed to living the traditional lifestyle that they did for thousands of years and would like to be able to return to, as difficult that may be in this day and age. But I fully support them in that and would like to see them retain all of the land that they had at one time back 150, 200 years ago. It would mean a lot for the humankind around the world to be able to do this for indigenous people. We owe this back to them. So I've been dealing with a number of elders on Pine Ridge Reservation and Rosebud Reservation, particularly because once I found this medicine wheel, I wanted to determine who built it, why they built it, where it was, and what the symbolism meant of this circular structure with eight radiuses coming from the center of the circle out to the circle itself. And that's basically all it was, but I didn't know what that symbolism meant. And ultimately, I did determine who built it, and I was able to do that by reading mythology, Lakota mythology, getting out in the field a number of times and performing field surveys and documentation of that medicine wheel site, as well as a number of others on the Northern Great Plains, and other research over a number of years. And ultimately, the interesting thing here is I found that this one medicine wheel is the part of a very large sacred structure that was constructed across the northern Great Plains, of which certain parts still remain, and you can go out and take a look at, and no one knows about this. This is a sacred hoop, which is a circle with just a cross in it, dividing the circle into fourths. It is a sacred hoop that the Lakota constructed across their territory, I estimate about 200 to 300 years ago, and it is a perfect circle, and it has a center at Bear Butte, in just outside of the Black Hills. And then this circle, there, like I say, there are parts that one can go and see. These are not just physiographic features like a mountain, something like that. These are actual constructions the Lakota created upon the land surface to identify the limits of their territory and the sacred hoop. And it is perfectly constructed. A surveyor today could not lay in the points in order to create this sacred hoop any better than these people did naked eye astronomy and measuring distances by walking. And they laid this out perfectly. And it just blew me away when I discovered this.
Wow. Well, can you tell us exactly what the sacred hoop means to them? Because I know we were going to get into sacred geometry and higher consciousness, since this is a spirituality type of show.
Sure.
And I'm sure that Steve and I both will have some questions for you. But do you know the history in the sacred American art? Because I'm going to get into helping. I want to help them become self-sufficient. And I'm sure there's many organizations that would join me in trading affairs in the Americas for the Native American Indian and their intuitive art. But, you know, gaining their trust. They may come on Sunday. I don't know the gentleman's name. I can't say his Indian name. My tongue isn't accustomed to saying those type of names, being brought up America as an English, as the Amish would say. But I can't twist all those fancy words. So he said I could just call him Dwayne. That's his American name. And you said you may know him or are familiar with him. Would you remember who I'm talking about?
I do know a number of elders, like I say, on Rosebud and Pine Ridge reservations, but I don't know that I know the gentleman that you know, so there's not much more I can say on that in terms of the person that you've been speaking to.
Okay.
But I can say that regarding what the sacred hoop means to the Lakota, essentially it means the same thing that all other cultures that have used the sacred symbol of a circle with a cross in it. The same thing was intended for those very same symbols by cultures thousands and thousands of years ago, just as for the Lakota a couple hundred years ago, just as it does today, and as a medicine wheel that people are most familiar with a circle and a cross in it, and then four colors, one in each of the quadrants, and then each quadrant is represented by a particular animal or a particular value that one has, such as courage and generosity and so forth. So this circle cut into fourths means four different things in the different quadrants, basically, as very fundamentally in terms of the sacred hoop. The interesting thing I say is that virtually all cultures have used that very symbol to represent sacred relationships, just as the Lakota did. Even more interesting, when you look at the geometry of that circle cut into fourths, or if you look at one that's cut into sixths, or cut into eighths, or there are hundreds and hundreds of different sacred symbols that are associated with the circle and crosses. What I discovered was, in all of these hundreds of similar circular sacred symbols, they are all two-dimensional facets. In other words, you can draw them on a piece of paper, or you could construct them out of stones on the ground surface, as a medicine wheel is. They're all two-dimensional geometries that are associated with a very specific three-dimensional spherical structure. And that was the next something that just I could not believe what I was finding. This was after years of research of looking at the Sumerians, the ancient Egyptians, the Celts across Western Europe, and on and on. And I started looking at every culture that I could to see if I was coming up with the same understandings of what these circular symbols were meaning. And indeed, when you find a particular symbol, it means the same thing for all cultures throughout time. The question is, when we get to cosmic consciousness, is why is a shaman 10,000 years ago coming up with a specific geometry, a symbol, to represent sacred relationships, and you have someone within the last few hundred years on the other side of the world, when our understanding is there's been no contact between these cultures over time and place, completely separated, yet those shamans, those priests are coming up with the very same geometry out of this three-dimensional spherical structure to create their own circular symbols that mean the very same things in terms of sacred relationships. And I cannot explain that other than at this point to say it has to do with cosmic consciousness. It has to do with an understanding that all people have within themselves, such that when you attempt to describe sacred relationships between human beings, the human and the earth, a human and the cosmos, human and the creator, when we attempt to draw out a symbol that would represent that, time and time again, it's associated with a circle and lines and dots and squiggles that in some fashion end up having a representative part of this three-dimensional spherical geometry. And I can't explain that any other way. If these cultures indeed never had any contact with each other, as scientists continue to say, then how else can you explain that everyone's using the same symbol to represent these same complicated sacred concepts? I have no other way to explain it. But I go through this in my book with all the different cultures that I've looked at. We looked at all of the symbols that they've used, and then ultimately I showed that the geometry is in fact related to this three-dimensional structure, which I call the sacred sphere, which turns out to be a spherical geometry made up of nine great circles in a very specific pattern to create a sphere, but it's nine circles around a spherical surface in order to create it. So it's not a sphere itself, it's nine great circles in a very specific pattern from which you can draw out all of these sacred symbols from cultures throughout time, as well as all sacred geometries. All sacred geometries. So the five Platonic solids, the tree of life of Kabbalah, if you look at the Vesica Pisces, two circles that are interconnected to a certain amount, that geometry fits into this spherical structure exactly. The figure eight fits into it exactly. On and on and on. I have yet to find a specific sacred geometrical structure that's been used by one culture or another over time that doesn't fit into this spherical structure. It's just amazing what mankind has done over thousands and thousands of years. And in fact, in the book, I go so far as to propose that this understanding of the importance of the sphere as being important to understanding sacred relationships may go back at least 1.5 million years ago. And there's evidence for that.
Well, I'm going to propose something to you, being that I'm trying to create a new relationship with various authors. I know that your book is very important to the world, and it's very thick, and if someone's mind isn't exactly there yet, it would be a little bit of a read, and I totally enjoy that type of thinking, but being an engineer, you've got a whole lot of information in there, and I would like you to tell people the name of your book and how they could get it, if you don't mind.
Sure. The name of the book is The Sacred Sphere, Exploring Sacred Concepts and Cosmic Consciousness Through Universal Symbolism. But basically, The Sacred Sphere is the title of the book. It came out a year ago in September, but it has a copyright for 2012. And it's available through my website, www.paulbeberly.com. It's also available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. So there are a number of venues one can go through to pick up the book. And I should say that through the end of November, I'm making the book available to everyone at cost. So it is just $11 for a copy of the book through November 30th. If they contact me directly and order it through me, that way I can personally sign a copy of the book and send it to them and ensure that they have it to read and not having to spend the $25 that it is retail. I'm selling them personally at $11 just to get the information out there right now because of the importance of 2012. And it is important for the Lakota, I should say. 2012 is important for all Native American tribes. This is an important year. We're not dealing with something that's fanciful and doesn't really mean something to everybody, that is just sort of a farce. This is a critical time. This is a critical year for the world and the human species, and the Lakota recognize this. And therefore, I want to get this book out now to everyone so they can read through, understand what I found, and draw this appreciation as I have for this sacred symbolism that you find everywhere. Even in modern architecture, you will begin to see this very geometry placed on buildings. And so people know about this, but no one's saying anything about it. It's a highly kept secret by certain individuals, but if you start paying attention, you'll start to see the symbolism. And that's one reason why I put the book together, because this isn't a stretch of my imagination at all. This is fact, and this is coming through from thousands of years of cultures using sacred symbols, and you can still see them today on modern architecture. And there's an intent for that. And so, I want to make the book available to as many people as I can at this point through November by offering it at cost for $11. So if people get a hold of me through my internet site, pauldburley.com, or they can email me at pdburley@gmail.com, pdburley, that's B-U-R-L-E-Y, @gmail.com. And I'll make sure a copy or more, if you'd like more to, in order to give to friends and family, that would be terrific too. But I'll get as many books as I can out at cost, and I'll absorb the rest of the cost for it, just so I can make the information available to everyone.
Great. I'm going to make you a page on my new ACO Core .org if you'd like. Well, I've already done it while we spoke. Paul D. Burley, and then I've got a new book to assist, $11 order signed copy, http://pauldburley.com, and then I've got your Facebook page also on that.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's just a way to help get the word out. Now, will you be able to make the LA Alchemy Conference? I think I told it to you rather late, and I didn't know if you had a chance to get in touch with Saeed David Farman on alchemyevent.com. Do you remember me telling you about that?
Yeah, and I did take a look at that, and I haven't talked to the organizer of it, but what I've been doing is looking at how I'm going to transport myself, get down there in time, and make the most of it being at the conference. So I'm still going through logistics, but I'm hoping to be there.
Oh, wonderful. All right, well, I know that he was accepting other speakers, and I'm going to have a banner with Steve and Janet Lesson in Hawaii, and so I would invite you to possibly get with them. Steve, do you have an actual table? Are you sharing one of the three that Janet's got, or what's going on with that? Do you know yet?
I do not plan on purchasing a table. You know, I think the only thing I was going to have was the banner that you were talking about, and we had discussed maybe sticking that over on one of Janet's tables or something like that,
yeah.
Or who knows? David wants
to
give me
Janet and her husband only have one book each, so I'm trying. She wanted me to send all my books, and I can't possibly afford all of them. But I was thinking maybe we could represent the TJ Marcy show or the ACO Corp, and you know, putting you guys up here with me and my husband, and we can join a joint venture as authors, because I have the Ace Folklife Club logo, but it's mostly people that support authors. They're not necessarily authors, but you know, I have enough people that will probably, if they like your book, all I can do is put you on the show and ask them to purchase your books if the subject interests them. And
sure.
So I'm on sort of a mission to help with spirituality and paranormal public outreach and how various people come into my life. So I've made you a page. I'll need you to send me a good picture or either permission to use your Facebook, but I'll put you on acocorp.org, and then Steve is going to help me. In the future, we plan on growing, Paul, so I'd like to invite you to be part of our family. I'm just trying to help as many people as I can. However, I'm not focused well enough on individuals working at the global international level because I'm working on global tectonic economics and trying to break the energy down, break it down like the kids say. Could you break that down for me? But I'm trying to get them where they at least, you know, they think we're all old fogies, right? You know, anybody
right.
that's over 40 is just, well, they know, you know. We're not interested in that, you know. We're under 40 years old, you know.
But just wait. Someday it'll be their turn.
Yeah, exactly. So what I'm thinking is trying to get as many people in this similar interest group of mine together and having them come on and, you know, speak of things. And I'll probably have to get you to come back. We've got plenty of time left now to discuss in more detail without boring people. But I think what we can do is move this structure forward about bringing in all the things they see on the History Channel, because my grandson loves that, and a lot of friends do. So a lot of kids don't watch TV like we did growing up. They're not into the slapstick or the comedy or the, at least a lot of them I talk to, because they're too busy playing games, okay? But they will occasionally, if it's historical or something, they like the ancient mysteries, and they like UFOs and ET stuff, you know, because grandma's into that. So I look at that as, you know, my family, half of them think I'm nuts, I'm sure. They don't say it politely. But a lot of my friends that were in NASA and engineers were, I'm sure you know the feeling, Paul, of being an engineer and yet being into things that don't seem quite scientific. You know, like a rock, you can see it.
Yeah.
You know, the sacred geometry is... Well, like the Fibonacci, you know, you want to go into that a little bit with how this plays into the medicine wheel, or are you, you know, I was trying to look at your film, but...
Sure. Of course, there are two ways to look at mathematics. One is numerically, meaning working with numbers and adding and subtracting and multiplying and dividing and so forth. Another way of looking at mathematics is purely geometry, that's spatially. So we're not going to deal with numbers at all. We're just going to look at the spaces between things. And so sacred geometry is really the geometrical aspects of understanding fundamental the relationships that we can apply as human beings to the rest of the universe and understand how we fit into the rest of the universe through sacred geometry. The alternative is numerology, where many cultures have used numbers themselves to identify particular concepts and relationships between the human being and the earth and the cosmos and the creator, however they define the creator. So one could look at numerology or geometry, and in many cultures they've combined the two of them. In fact, I'm in my research of late looking at the Bible, I'm finding there's a tremendous amount of information that is in there, geometrically speaking, that I've been able to find no research on. No one discusses these hidden levels of the Bible, but in the first two lines of the Bible, there is a description of spherical geometry in there. And if you read it, in the beginning, God created the earth and the heavens, there's much more to what's being said there. Not in the English language, but when you go back to the ancient Hebrew and understand what each of these words was actually meaning, suddenly there's a whole new world in terms of geometry being discussed. And to my surprise, the discussion is on spheres and the numbers 3, 6, and 9. And of course, those numbers come into play with the sacred sphere that I discovered a number of years ago. So that's got me very interested. So, the sacred geometry is important because many cultures have defined certain structures like the cube or the tetrahedron or the dodecahedron as being important. as a relationship, describing relationships between people and other concepts or relationships, just as the numerology does.
Well, let me give Steve a minute because he may have to leave to go do another show. He's being my little social butterfly. Like I have another friend, Hugh Charlson, that when you have a new book out, you can go out and get on a lot of blog talk radios because you've got a new book. And I'm sure you know that people get on a free circuit. You don't get paid to go on these radio shows, but in turn you get a lot of free publicity of their listening audience, right?
Sure.
So even though he started here, he's doing me and Saeed both a favor by promoting my publishing company for those that need to get their book out, you know, and I believe everybody is the author of their own life story and should be out there publishing their own book. And I hope, Paul, that you will begin your second or third, I guess this would be your third book, would it not, if you did a on how you see numbers in the Bible and the like the Fibonacci code and all that, because I've seen some of your videos and they're excellent. So you're doing a wonderful job, you know. And I could see you working with us if you're interested. We're going to have a conference between paranormal and spirituality in the Ace Folklife Historical Society and their archivist. And I also have videographers and people that are wanting to do spiritual documentaries on my LinkedIn. I invite you. You're not a member of my LinkedIn professional group, are you, Paul, on LinkedIn?
I am on LinkedIn, but I don't think I'm affiliated with that particular group.
Yeah, okay. Well, you may want to, of course, I've got at least two, but try, we'll just have to look, Teresa Morris or TJ Morris Publishing, maybe. Try one of those two, and we'll try to get linked together on that. And I'm not sure which one my producers are under. I just know I have a whole list of documentary people that make documentaries. And I know Jose Escamilla, it was his idea as much as Tommy Hawksblood. And Jose Escamilla is, I think he's either whole Indian or Mexican, I've forgotten. Are you familiar with Jose Escamilla?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Well, he has done several films, and he was out of Roswell, lives in California presently, but he's going to be bringing over some films he's made. He's very well known in the, I guess you'd say, the UFO community. But we're going to try to have a banner, so to speak, with UFO books. And Sacred, I've got it, I think I'm going to have a banner for biographers. And this isn't really this isn't your autobiography, but yet it is laden with your years, 30 years of your work in sacred symbols and geometry. But it could be under the.
Yeah, it is.
Excuse me?
There are some tidbits in there about my history, especially at the beginning where I'm explaining how I encountered this medicine wheel. But otherwise, my intention in the book was to just lay out the facts the way they were, look strictly at the mythology and the architecture of Stonehenge and the Great Pyramid and so forth, and look at the references to how this spherical geometry is coming into play for all of these cultures without my bias in there. And so I was trying to be very careful to be as objective as I can. Of course, it's hard to do that as an author, is just completely stay out of it. But I've tried to make the book as readable as possible for not only the general reader, but also if one has their PhD in archaeology or anthropology or geometry, that all of the data is there to satisfy them with regard to what I'm speaking about in terms of the mathematics and geometry that is so fundamental to this structure. It's not just an academic concern, it's also a spiritual one, which means that it becomes in the realm of everyone. So I wanted to be sure that this book was readable for everyone and lay things out as easily as I could to make sure everyone understood what these concepts are, because it's vital for everyone, these sacred relationships, and these symbols are representing that. So I've been very careful about how I put that book together. There's 600 pages, but if anyone is concerned or wondering about these issues, that information is in the book.
There's also, you've discussed something that Linda Moulton Howe, now she will be there from the History Channel, Linda Moulton Howe, and she's sort of known I talk a lot for the kids, you know, like 13 and above to 20, 5 and 30, but she's sort of known like the cow lady, folks. But she's also been working in similar instances, Paul, with sacred geometry is in the ancient artifacts. And I noticed you mentioned a couple of places that she talks about over in Egypt and some finds. And I can't, any other time I'd know the name of it, over in Egypt. Are you familiar with her work, Linda Moulton-Howell?
Yes, I am somewhat. I haven't gone into detail studying her research and her work, but I am aware of her.
Okay, now what she's been working on over in Egypt or somewhere, I've forgotten the name of this. Oh, I can't believe I forgot that because I wanted to ask you that. It was one of my questions, but I didn't write it down. Anyway, I could see you meeting her at the conference and visualizing that with you and you're more you could both get in a very interesting conversation. So I do hope you get up there. Now, I'd like to do you have David's phone number so you can call him and suggest that I suggest you give a talk?
Yeah, I don't think that you gave me the phone number. There was the website address for the conference. But
yeah,
I don't have that information in front of me. But, yeah, if you could forward that to me, that would be terrific. I would really
appreciate it. I don't mind even putting it on the – he doesn't mind. He's public like me. Some of us are out there just public. Trust me, he's one. But Steve can also, if you'd like, he's going to be there, and he also is going to be helping us, we hope, in the next one. But we're going to have it over here in Pigeon Forge. It'll be March 22nd, 3rd, and 4th. We moved it back from February due to all the snow, and some of the people couldn't get over the Appalachian Ridge over here. Are you familiar with the way the mountains are set up over here?
Oh, I've been through them a number of times, and there's no straight route right through them. So,
yeah
it can be a little difficult when the weather's not right.
Yeah, and for our North Carolina people couldn't get over the ridge, and I was trying to hurry it up because my husband's so ill, and we can drive him over there without him having to get on a plane and then come back and still make his dialysis. So, anyway, normally, here, let me give you this phone number, folks. It's and Paul writes this down, and he should answer. He likes you to talk on Skype, but he ran his Skype address by me so fast I didn't catch it. But I do have his phone number. It's 1-310-355-0505. He is a public figure such as myself. Some people don't like their number given out, folks, but when we're conference people and we have publishing or speaking and we're promoting our friends, we have our numbers public. His contact is info@alchemyevent.com. That's A-L-C-H-E-M-Y, event.com. If you have any questions, he prefers you to call him Pacific Time 9 to 5. So, Paul, I would suggest you call him California between 9 and 5 Pacific. That's number 1-310-355-0505. And Steve, if you can, I'd like you to hook up with Paul. He's a friend of mine. He's an author, engineer. You've heard him. You could say, I remember you, except he's dropped off now. So I guess he had another call or another show. But I was fixing to have him mention being there. But if you two can hook up there, it would be really good to have you, promote your book over there in regards to what all is involved. So now we have the last hour. If you would like to dissect some of your the nine great circles, the key to the universal sacred geometry, would you like to break that down into spiritual consciousness? Maybe you've got a trademark. It says Breakthrough in Future Sciences and Spiritual Consciousness. Are you familiar with that, or was that the last Pythagoras conference? Is that yours, or?
I'm familiar with those concepts. The Pythagoras conference was where I was going to have five presentations, and what I've done because that conference was canceled is I've begun putting together these videos and posting them on YouTube so everyone can see now what the topics were going to be and the entire discussion for each of these one-hour lectures. And so at this point I have four of those videos up, And one of them is addressing the nine great circles as the key to universal sacred geometry. And again, these nine great circles form this spherical structure that I refer to as the sacred sphere. So there's about a 10-minute video on that. I have another one that's purely addressing this issue concerning the sacred sphere in terms of cosmic consciousness. And another interesting part of that video is discussing what is known as the megalithic yard, which is a measurement, a lineal measurement of about 2.7 feet that apparently people back 4,500, 5,000 years ago were using this way of measuring in order to build the various stone circles. And there's thousands of them across Europe. They had a specific measurement to be able to do that. Well, it turns out that many cultures had the same unit measurement around the world, or approximate measurement to this 2.7 feet. Lo and behold, a couple years ago, I started looking at this Cloud Peak medicine wheel that I had discovered. And wouldn't you know, it is built exactly to the specifications of this 2.72 feet of the megalithic yard.
How did they know that?
This is where I get back to this cosmic consciousness, because I don't know how a culture in Europe 5,000 years ago can be using the same length of measurement as Native Americans were 200 or 300 years ago now. I don't know how to explain that.
Well, there's a good book right there, you know, if you've got the nerve to do it.
Well, I actually include that. That's one of the chapters in the book is discussing this very thing, because there's something going on here in terms of building these huge megalithic structures across Europe, and it's connected with these medicine wheels that are much smaller for the most part in North America. There are some gargantuan ones, but this little medicine wheel that I found is only about 7.5 feet in diameter. But it's obviously built to the same with the same unit length as these megalithic yards in Europe. So I don't know how to explain that. That is a part of what I'm studying now, is I believe that with so many cultures throughout time using this very length to measure things out, that it is fundamental, associated with nature in some fashion, that a ancient culture or indigenous cultures, obviously not highly in favor of nor using technology to any great degree, are able to come up with utilizing the very same length of measurement to a hundredth of a foot. And it
now,
must
what
be
is
some way of,
the MY is 2.17, what was it?
It's 2.72 feet. 2.72 feet. Now, these people didn't know anything about a foot. So that 2.7 feet was just like the foot that we might use. They just happened to use a length that was closing in more along the lines of a yard instead of a foot. And then there's also such a thing as a half of a megalithic yard is being used many times too. But at any rate, many cultures are using this length, including, I believe, Stonehenge. And I don't discuss Stonehenge specifically in the book, but I do discuss in a couple chapters the ancient Egyptians and their constructions, including the Great Pyramid at Giza. And I'm very confident in my theory of what the purpose of the Great Pyramid is. And I lay that all out. I take a full chapter to explain that bit by bit and be as clear as I can. And that theory comes out of understanding that in all cultures, the circle as a sacred symbol means sphere. So when you see a circular symbol, think sphere. It's not a circle. It's a sphere. So that's critical and has been missed by virtually all of humanity except for the few people that know. Everyone else is missing out on this and talking about medicine wheels as being vitally important. And they are important, but there's a greater meaning to them in terms of a spherical structure. Once you understand that, as I have, suddenly I understand why the Great Pyramid was built the way it was. Not just the pyramidal structure, but the interior rooms, the the hallways between the king's chamber and the queen's chamber. I discuss this in my book specifically as to what the purpose of the Great Pyramid is, once you understand the architecture based on this spherical geometry. It all lays out very simply, utilizing known concepts and understandings that the ancient Egyptians had. So I can tell you why, what the purpose of Stonehenge is. Now, I don't go into that in the book, but I have written a paper on that, and I've put a copy of that up on my website, so people can go to the pauldburley.com website and look for the link to the Stonehenge paper, and they can read all about that. So, my next book will be dealing with ancient symbolism too, but I'm more interested at this point in understanding symbols that have been misinterpreted as writing. When, for example, there's some writing in Scotland that is symbols that are understood to be representative of letters, meaning some, so they all put together their meaning, some word, nobody's been able to figure out the language yet. Well, what I discovered, and relatively quickly, again, because I'm using this spherical symbolism, I recognized what these four symbols were and said, this is not language. These are constellations. And they're very specific locations in the sky needed for navigation. But no one has noticed this before. And my wife says, well, that's so simple. Why hasn't anybody else figured that out? I think it's because at the very baseline, people are still thinking two-dimensional for symbols and not three-dimensional. And recognizing that ancient cultures knew the Earth was a sphere. They knew the moon was a sphere. They thought of the universe as being spherical. And so, but you can't make a pyramid in the shape of a sphere, something that large in the shape of a sphere. It's very difficult to do. But you can lay out something very stable that will last for thousands and thousands of years if you build a very strong, stable, very large base foundation and then work your way up to a point. It'll be a very stable structure. That's why the Egyptians built it as a pyramid. But if you start looking at the geometry and the mathematics, the numerology associated with the Great Pyramid, and there's a lot of information out there on this, you realize that that pyramid was built to tell anyone who starts doing the measurements of that pyramid, they'll start to realize that this is representing a sphere or a hemisphere, a half of a sphere. And so I go into that in the book too, but everything just starts to fall out so simply if we just recognize that circle equals sphere and take it from there. So I go through this for many cultures and many examples in the book, and I think if people read through that, they'll begin to have a greater understanding of who they are, how they fit into this world and the greater society and the earth, and what is really important. What can be left behind as nonsensical, not important in our lives, and what truly is important. And for me, it just boils down to these sacred relationships and understanding we are each a part of a greater whole. We are all one. And that our relationships between ourselves, between you, Teresa, and me, between ourselves and the earth and the cosmos and the creator, if what we're doing day to day in our lives is not associated with those very sacred relationships, it truly isn't important. And that's what the sacred sphere boils down to me, realizing that's why I was led, I believe, spiritually, to write this book, gather the information that I did, put it together, and make it available to everyone. I didn't write this book for me. I didn't write this book to make money off of it. This is it's not a quest. It was a request by the Creator when I had a vision in 2007 as I was working on this. And I was mountaineering out west, and I had a vision suddenly. And I can get into that, a lot of details on that. But
yeah, I didn't know you talked like I did.
Here I am, an engineer and a geologist, and I'm going to start telling people that I had a vision.
So, yeah, I was taken aback. I hadn't heard that. I'm in shock.
I don't get into that in the book either.
I love that kind of talk. You can ask Cindy Muller, talked to me about my circle and cross last night, and she said, that's the Earth symbol. And I have a feeling that, see, I was guided to her. She has a gift for everyone, and she's working out her own life story right now. She's probably listening to us right now, but she doesn't want to come on. She has, you know, various reasons of not sharing with us tonight or for whatever reason. She's building on her own life story, but yet the universe has called her, and I sought her out on my Facebook page for her Reiki energy. But I didn't know. Can you hear me, Paul?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Okay, I didn't know that she was a Reiki master as a healer, but she also understands the ephemeris, and she has able to read basically astrology and how that affects you when you come here in the grand scheme of things. But also she understood, I think she has some understanding of the grand scheme as the civilization is one, and that she comes with incarnations she's trying to work out. Not that it matters, I don't guess, really, because as of yesterday, that world ended, as far as I'm concerned, on October 31st, which I had an agreement from my vision as well. But this megalithic yard is important. It was created at one time dealing with the pendulum that we first used calibrating and observing Venus. I don't know if you're familiar with that theory.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that theory, and I've met one of the authors of the book that they write about that theory. And I was very comfortable with that theory, too, until I realized that Native Americans were using the same very length.
Oh, and wow. Okay, so
my knowledge. To my knowledge, the Native American tribes on the Great Plains 200 years ago were not. Now, maybe they were, and I just don't know this, but I would be very surprised if they were using a pendulum and creating a box with a window of a certain length and setting it up oriented to a certain part of the sky to watch Venus move through from one end of the box to the other and count pendulum swings and divide that by two and come up with the megalithic yard. I don't think that cultures throughout time were all doing this, but around the world and for thousands of years, so many cultures have used that length. When I look at the Native Americans, I just don't see that that is the process they would have gone through as people in England did 5,000 years ago to come up with this length. I think there's something far more fundamental here for that length.
There's anything historically, scientifically able to prove prior to 3000 BC before Christ with the megalithic yard, MY?
Much of the evidence for the megalithic yard comes from thousands of years BC. In other words, 4,000, 5,000 years ago. Some of it is more of, you know, 1,500, 2,000 years ago, but you can find it thousands of years back, used by different cultures. So there's certainly a technology that's being used in order to determine that length, but my guess right now is it's associated with sound, and I believe that 2.7172 feet is associated with a wavelength, and I've determined what that frequency is, and I would like to get out to some sites such as Stonehenge and test my theory on that, because if one can use pipes or drums, the type of instruments that would have been used thousands of years ago in ceremonies and rituals, if one can use those instruments and come up with that length as a result of acoustics in these megalithic structures, that might help to explain where this number is coming from. Because now you don't need high technology. You just need to measure wavelengths, and you can do that by using particular sounds and sending that sound to a hard surface, such as a large rock megalith or a sharp face of bedrock, and listening for the sound to come back to you in a certain length and certain length of time, and you can come up with a particular wavelength. And I suspect that this 2.72 feet is an important wavelength, and this may be where the megalithic yard is being derived, but I've got work to do on that yet.
Are you there? Can you hear me?
Here I am. Yep, I'm back. Yep, sorry.
Okay, sorry. Somehow we got disconnected. I apologize for that, folks. I don't know what they could hear. Could you hear anything? Or were you talking? Or I'm not sure what happened. But
yeah, I was fine. I was talking away there, but suddenly realized that it wasn't just silence. It was dead silence. And I thought, something's going on there.
Well, I apologize for that, but
we didn't hear any snoring.
Okay, well, if anybody else is out there that wants to talk, sometimes these people call in on Skype, and we've got two Skype listeners right now, and it messes our connection in. We've got some people in the chat room, but if anybody would like to ask Paul a question right now while we're having this check on whatever happened, I'm not sure what it was. All of a sudden, I heard all this shh on my end. It was like a... You know, the old TVs, I was like, what's going on?
Yeah, white noise.
Yeah, white noise. I was hearing white noise. I was like, okay, Earth to Paul.
Well, TJ.
Oh, there's Tommy. Oh, Tommy. Oh, great. This is Tommy Hawksblood's here. Tommy, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I heard everything, and then it went into a silence for about 2 minutes.
Huh.
Somebody was moving around. I think he was still moving around, and we could hear it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, Tommy Hawksblood, this is Paul Burley, one of my friends, the author. And Paul, this is Tommy Hawksblood. He's on tonight. I haven't heard from our Lakota Indians, Tommy, so I'm glad you joined us. However, Paul, can you give Tommy a little bit about the Lakota, and he can in turn give you a little bit about his Lakota experience? I'd like y'all to know each other. Go ahead, Tommy.
Sure.
What?
Tommy, did you hear any of what I had mentioned before regarding my contacts on Pine Ridge and Rosebud reservations?
No, I didn't. I just started listening to the theory about the pyramids and the measurement.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my experience that led to me writing this book that came out a year ago started with... finding a medicine wheel in the mountains of Wyoming, and I was curious about who built it and why and where and so forth, and that ultimately led to finding the answers to those questions and led me to Pine Ridge and Rosebud reservations in terms of I wanted to show what I had found, that I had documented this medicine wheel and provided that information to the state of Wyoming and so forth. But I didn't want to discuss it otherwise with a third party because I'm not Lakota. I can't speak for the Lakota, but I know what I'm finding. And so I was led to a helper. He's my helper now on Pine Ridge Reservation, and I described to him everything I had. I opened up my computer and showed him all of the photographs that I had taken, and I gave him copies of my reports and so forth. And I said, if I am doing something I should not, if I have information that I could give out that I should not be giving, then I'm done, and I'll throw it away, and I'm done with it because I don't want to be doing something that I shouldn't be doing. And since then, over the last 6 years, I've had nothing but full support, and I've really appreciated that. And I work very hard in a sacred manner to ensure that the information that I'm getting out there is understood for what it means for the Lakota, and an understanding that ultimately it means something for all people on Earth. So I've been very, very honored to be able to do this work on behalf of Creator, who requested me in this vision in 2007 to proceed and continue studying, and the spirits have been with me physically. Again, as an engineer and a geologist, talking about these things still seems very strange to me, but it has turned my life around. This is my journey for the rest of my life, getting this information out to everyone. that is the request that was given to me, and I cannot say no to Creator. And so the book is a part and parcel of that. But so I've been talking to a number of elders on Pine Ridge and Rosebud, and they've been very supportive. And I'm glad I'm able to return some of the lost information that appears to have been lost in terms of some of these sacred sites and making these elders aware of them again.
Paul, Karen Kinsey has just joined our room, and she'd like you to tell her the name of your book again so she can get it. Karen, if you'd like to come on board, we can have you speak to Paul if you'd like. But in the meantime, some people have Skype and some can't do it because of their phone contracts, Paul, just so you know. Some people come in a place that you can't see. It's called a chat room. And
sure.
I can see them, but you can't. But could you please give her the name of your book again, where she can locate it?
Yeah, the name of the book is The Sacred Sphere. And my name is Paul D. Burley, B-U-R-L-E-Y. The book is available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. You can request it through my website, pauldburley.com. And if you go through the website and send a comment to me requesting the book, I can arrange to sell it directly, and I'd be glad to give send a signed copy to anyone who requests it through my website. And if they do so, I will sell the book at cost. I will absorb all the other costs that are associated with the transportation and obtaining the book. So all that people are having to pay if they go through me through the end of November is just purely for the printing and the shipping for mailing it to people. So the cost is $11 in order to do that. Otherwise, you can get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and other booksellers, and usually it's at a reduced price through them. Usually you can get it for about $18 to $20. It's list price at $20. But if you go through my website, I can get it to you for $11 through the end of this month.
Okay. Karen, you're on the air. If you'd like to speak with Paul and Tommy about the Indian sacred geometry or whatever, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I did miss the title because I was switching over to Skype, and it kind of blacks out there for just about a minute. But so it's Sacred Geometry is the name of the book?
It's The Sacred Sphere.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Instead of a circle, again, these all circular symbols are really symbols in themselves representing a sphere, a spherical structure. And
right,
so
right.
That's the purpose of the book, writing about the sacred sphere. So
that's interesting because I have talked to another author who does a particular kind of tool, and it's a very neat tool for social change, and it's a sphere, and it was based on his experience with the medicine wheel. And this,
yep.
You know, this is his life work. And he calls himself, if you want to look him up online, his name is Spherical Phil. It's hard to say, but Spherical Phil, yeah. But his tool is amazing. And, yeah, he it was like kind of like he was downloaded with stuff. I don't know if he'd say that, but might. He might. So.
Well, some other things that I've discovered since publishing the book that I'm glad to make people aware of now, even though it's not in the book. Ultimately, this is where my studies are leading. I believe that the shape of the universe is based on the same geometry as I described for the sacred sphere of nine great circles. Now, the geometry isn't in terms of the great circles, but in terms of a polyhedron. So there's a certain name for that, a dysdiachus dodecahedron. I discussed that in the book. But the point is, I believe that the shape of the universe, the four-dimensional shape of the universe, based on current astrophysical studies, is this sacred sphere geometry. As well, all energy, in all forms that energy is, throughout the universe, and that means you and me as energy. All matter is energy, essentially. The geometry of the fundamental unit of energy connected throughout the universe is this very same geometry. And that is wild, because it means it doesn't matter what scale you're looking at, from universal to subatomic to the very fundamental units of energy, the photon and so forth. If you could look at their shape, you would be seeing the geometry of the sacred sphere geometry. Mm. That is wild. That is wild. And but that is where it has taken me now in terms of this geometry. If that is true, then I sincerely believe we're looking at the very first time, any day now, where science is going to intersect the sacred, and they're going to come to the same realization of what the fundamental aspects are geometrically and numerically, mathematically, of the universe. And suddenly, even though the scientists may say, look what we've discovered, shamans 12,000 years ago already knew it.
I'm really interested in your book. That's very fascinating. Does it coincide with Nassim Haramein's looking at that?
In fact, I attended a conference a year ago where he was speaking, and I listened to him, and the last slide, I was blown away at this, the last slide he showed was of the Flower of Life,
mm-hmm.
Which is a sacred geometry in and of itself. Well, the Flower of Life turns out to be a two-dimensional representation, a two-dimensional facet of the sacred sphere geometry.
Yes, what happens when you can carve it on something.
Yeah. So it means that he's realizing, or just becoming to recognize, that the geometry of energy is this Flower of Life structure. Well, I can't prove it. I have to wait for the scientists to prove it to themselves. But when they look at three dimensions, they are going to see the sacred sphere geometry. They're going to recognize that this polyhedral structure is a distiachus dodecahedron, and they are going to come out and tell us, look at what we've discovered. So pay attention, because when they do, people for thousands of years have known that. So the scientists will not have discovered it for anyone but themselves. But when that happens, it's going to click for everyone on this earth, recognizing that suddenly we are all one, we're all part of the same one universe, and recognizing what the fundamental aspects and relationships are in this universe is all going to click for everyone once that comes together.
So it's no coincidence that you and I are friends then.
Well, you know, we're all off doing our own thing, but I believe that there's an intent for that. And we all came to Earth for a particular reason. There's a particular mission we're all here to accomplish in our own little way, and hopefully we are able to accomplish it before we leave this Earth. But we all have a task in mind, and if we do it well, it will be in accordance with what the universe and Creator is wanting of us to do, and we will see that in the end. As you were saying in your discussion at the beginning of the show, we are all here for a particular reason, and when we're done with this human life, we will move on. The life will continue. Life continues forever, and I say that, and people can recognize that, because if we are all part of one, if we are simply just a piece of the universe, in fact, we are the universe, one can look at it that way, and if the universe is operating all around us, it's alive. All energy is alive. All energy is power, and we can take some of that power and use it in our lives, and we will continue to use that in the many, many ways that we live out our lives, live this experience eternally in the universe. So I'm right with you there, Teresa, in terms of living one life after another. It will just continue on and on and on.
Well, brilliant,
Paul.
Of course, and Karen, I'd like to also, Karen, have you been with us before? Real quick, Tommy, let me see.
Yes, a long time ago. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were the one researching Utah, were you not?
Yeah, I have a very sacred property there that's very, very amazing. And I've gotten different messages, and some for sure, if nothing else, the elements there are incredibly powerful.
Yeah, I'm amazed, Paul, at my brain. And folks, I don't mean that out of, I'm very humbled at the fact that you've got to realize I have 7 nights a week for 4 months. That's a lot of shows.
Yeah.
But this is only the second time I've heard Karen. Is it not, Karen?
Yes.
And she didn't talk that much that night. She just asked a couple of questions, I think, of Aurora Light. I can't remember that part. But anyway, Karen, thank you for joining. Or it might have been my husband. I think you were talking to Thomas R. Morris, the author.
regarding extraterrestrial visitations and Area 51. And I admire your work and your research, and I'd like to get to know you better. So if you could maybe come back to tomorrow night as well, if you have a chance. You don't tune in very often. I've not seen you in a long time, you know.
I've been very, very busy. I've been actually spending a lot of time out there. I don't know, Paul, if you've had that experience, but it's almost addictive to be present there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I have in my vision what Creator told me to do, and it's very simple, and he went through it twice, and it was to pay attention, listen. And then I was shown a number of images and so forth, but then I was brought back and I was told pay attention and listen. And then I was shown these same images to reinforce, and then I was sent back. And that is really all people have to do, is stop speaking, stop trying to give your two cents worth, and just listen to the universe. Get out into nature. Get away from the cities. Get away from the noise. Don't talk. Don't think. Open your heart. Clear your mind. Pay attention and listen. And if you do that, you will hear things that you didn't realize were all around you all the time. You just haven't been paying attention and listening.
Absolutely.
That is what
brilliant.
I've been doing, and it is so easy to do. And people will meditate and do yoga, and that's fine if that's the way they can get there. For me, it was getting back into nature, paying attention and listening, because that is what Creator, and at the time of my vision, I believe what I was seeing the grandfather.
Talking
to me. So
that's very similar. You know, I've had amazing experiences out on in this place, and it's a property I own on a river, and it's geologically very old. It's Jurassic era, depending on, you know, I mean, that's what they're calling it, right? Rock. And so it just has a very ancient feel to it, and had many, many messages about it. But when I go out there, it's quite powerful. I've had missing time. I've seen craft with the assistance of technology. And somebody suggested to me that, yes, the place is very powerful, but it's my being out there and just getting in touch with myself. And when I go, I'm always alone.
Amazing. God, you're a brave woman. Now, Tommy wants to get in here too, Karen. I'm not sure if he has something for Paul or Karen, but he's got an anxious download. I can feel him. So, Tommy, he's one of my co-hosts on the weekend. Tommy, would you like to invite them back on your show, or what are you feeling, Tommy?
Sure. Saturday's always open for anybody to come in to share what they want, a part of the paranormal or dimensional worlds. But I had two things. One for Paul is, I don't know how much you've been following the crop circles and everything.
Yes.
They actually released the three-dimensional versions of every one of them, and they all have specific meanings.
Yeah.
They're only coming out of that as of right now, which is really incredible.
Yeah, I've been watching the crop circle phenomena for a number of years, and paying attention to the geometries, and it has only been relatively recently that the very specific geometry, the three-dimensional sacred sphere geometry, is coming out in these. Facets of it would come. They would be getting close, but in August there was one that fitted exactly. And I've been anticipating that before December hits, we will see it. And lo and behold, I think it was about August 17th, something like that. I think that's right. The geometry was there. So I knew that eventually it was going to be coming about because it's so fundamentally important. And sure enough, there it was.
Well, the new one that just came out in Ohio has 46 circles. The one thing different about this crop circle than any other crop circle, I don't know if you understand how they're actually made, what burns or puts the bends the leaves and the plants down and everything.
Yeah, I've heard a number of theories, but I don't really pay too much attention to the technology. For me, it is what it is. It's more important to pay attention to what the symbolism is.
The reason why I'm saying that, this one does something that no other crop circle does. Basically, all the crop circles kind of have welded in a certain pot and bent over. Every one of the plants on this crop circle is bent at a different height. It would have taken forever for 100 people trying to even make half of the crop circle because they're all bent. Every one of them, every little stalk is at a different height. It's not like a wave just went over the whole thing and created it. There's there's nobody that has an idea even of how it could have been created in such a short time by what kind of means.
Yeah, I would suspect that this being something relatively new, I don't know if other crop circles have had this, but if they haven't, there's meaning to it being presented. These crop circles are being presented to us. They mean something, each one of them, but they also mean something in this particular order that they're being given. And if now they're showing us that this ability or for some reason that each of these stalks of grain can be bent over at different heights, that's important to realize for some reason. I don't know exactly what it means, but I wouldn't doubt it.
Well, the basic meaning for that is no person could have done it, period.
Yeah.
Nobody, no group of people on this planet could do it. But the other thing was I wanted to bring out when she mentioned Nassim Harriman.
Yeah.
He was in Hawaii for 3 days, and I got to be part of it for a while. The problem is, I have a few problems with that. He claims to have the Ark of the Covenant. One of them, he said, there's four of them on the planet. Okay, that's one of the things he said. All right. The second thing is, at the end of the seminar, which he did with the people that were there, he wanted to introduce everybody to the race that he's dealing with, which is the Galactic Confederation. So he put everybody into a verbal kind of meditation, which he worked them through to bring them to meet the Galactic Confederation. We're at different levels, and many people are at different levels. It's what you want to deal with and who you want to deal with, because every race has their agenda. And if we're going to work with the Galactic Confederation, which I will not, people call them different things, but they're the ones that most people think they're working with, have a specific agenda. And now there's a couple people that I agree with that are totally against working with them or getting on the ships or anything like that. But the idea that a specific race with the Galactic Confederation is giving us the messages, or who's giving us the messages, like you said, they're really important now, and they need to be translated. There's a lady that just put a brand new book out about what every symbol means in a crop circle. Whether she's right or not, it's a different story. But if you start listening to some of the things she says about each one and the symbols and basically the molecule structure, what they relate to, it's very important. I mean, the symbols and there somebody, something is giving us the messages of what we should be doing and focusing on and what's really happening, how the DNA is splitting and things like that. But yeah, I just thought it was really interesting when she mentioned him, because I know he has a specific agenda, because he came to Hawaii. He wants to make planes that fly on this energy cube that has no power, doesn't have to be connected to any kind of power. And they were going to start building the planes here. But when he came to Galactic Confederation.
I've got something. It took you, Paul, and Karen coming together. Before it hit me, Karen, I can't believe you're helping me here, holding the energy, and Tommy. But, Tommy, if you hadn't have voiced that in Paul, I would never have gotten this. Paul, I have a symbol that was given to me in Hawaii. You know how you said divine in 2007? Well, that was the year, finally, that I started writing for UFO Digest.
Okay.
And voicing my channelings, which I was like, what the crap am I doing? You know, because I'm very, I work with engineers at NASA, so I think very analytical. I'm a Spock. But, if you were on Star Trek, you say, well, which character would you like to be? Well, I'm split between the empath, the pretty woman with the dark hair, and Spock. So I'd be somewhere in between. But
never want to be one of the faceless people. On the show, because they never make it through the hour. So
exactly, no nameless. Yeah. Now, a little humor there, y'all. ET humor. Okay. Now, on my ascension center, when they hit me with lightning in Hawaii, and it wasn't at me, but I felt it in the ground within 3 feet or so. I got out of my car. Lightning hit me where the a tree was. It split. It scared the crap out of the few people that were in this little parking lot. It was like a Kinko's. But this Ascension Center was like, geez, Zeus, give me a break here. I'm just a human, So it was like a Zeus or God said, you know, you would have this ascension center. So I was like, I didn't even know what it meant. So I thought I was going there for my logo, which is like Ace Folk Life, but that came later. But it was for J.B. Cork. And, folks, you can check out the J.B. Cork logo. I got it patented in Ohio. That's what I was going into this Kinko place. It was something else back in the early 89 to 93 area. They didn't have Kinko's back then. I think, well, they did, but this wasn't one, okay? It was one of these generic copy places. Well, I had a big company in Hawaii. But anyway, make a long story short, the logo I'd like you to see is on acocorp.org, and it's out there. You could probably just go to Google Images and hit Ascension Center. And I put this pink background on the back, which a lot of people don't like. I've got it here in white. But this, before they could do it on computers, and you could probably look at it as an engineer, Farmy, because
okay.
It looks like one of the UFOs, and yet it was sending out energy like a crop circle picture. And I didn't get it. And all of a sudden, I just had this enlightenment, you know, like lights came on in my room just now, and the room turned gold. And I'm like, OMG, you know, oh my God. It just got it. It was like y'all talking about Utah and her being alone and you being an engineer and Tommy and the crop circles and the meaning. And here it is. I'm like, because I was going, well, what are they trying to tell me? And they tell me really like you do. I mean, I get things all the time, but I guess you call them downloads. But, you know, I don't try to make a profession out of it. You know, I was a psychic back then, so I guess I was primed but dying a couple times. But you got to see, you could probably help interpret this. You know, like there are no coincidences. Maybe you're in the engineer that can find the meaning behind this. You know what I mean? If I brought this into NASA going, because they loved me. They all thought I was a kid because I was, you know, young, and my husband, like I was 17, he was 19. He was the youngest one working for Chris Kraft. Chris Kraft got him out of Vietnam War to work for NASA during the thing. And then he called me up there when they said, you know, bogeys, they were seeing bogeys. So, you know, we're all part of this big UFO enigma going on before they even had MUFON, okay? So, you know, lo and behold, 30, 40 years later, I get this friggin' looking thing going, what is this? And I can't appreciate it because I don't know what it interprets to be. I don't know what it is. So there you go. But I just got this that you've got to see this, whatever it is. I don't know. Yeah. Is it a UFO with energy coming out of it? Does it mean something, you know, with the word Ascension Center? And I told you I put you on the ACO page. Well, we have Ascension Center, and I keep telling people it doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the extraterrestrials. And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, no, seriously. If, you know, so I go into this. Okay, how many times have you gotten an oversized, you know, it's bright, sunny day, and you think you're going to be dead because lightning splits a tree on a sunny day? Now, how do you explain that? Sort of, you know what I mean? Like, and then we go into this place where there's a computer, and we weren't even, okay, folks, we didn't even have Windows 95 yet, okay? We weren't even globally. I had a company going, I've got to do Ascension Center. And they're like, what's that? I said, I have no earthly idea. And I said, but I've got to have this symbol. So I walked right into this building where I was going for my J.B. Cork logo to have them. I had to get it patented, and attorneys in Ohio wanted it. And I walk in, and then I'm going, it's like three triangles, sort of like, have you ever seen a UFO? Do you know? And the guy's like, no. He was from India. He'd seen, or he knew about whatever we call them over there in India, animas or animas, or, you know that word. And I said, oh, good. He said, well, my wife is, you know, Indian too. And then I said, well, can you just sort of put like a triangle with energy or something? I don't know what it means. It's an ascension center. But then he, all he had to do is touch the computer on, sit down in front of it. He said, well, I don't have that capability. We don't have that, you know, we don't have that capability to create those type of, you know, I don't understand. And blip, the computer came on. Okay, now you remember lightning hit outside a tree. He had flipped it on. I watched him because he was working the desk, and he just had one little computer sitting up against the wall, turned on the computer, and started to do something and pushed his chair back. It was on wheels. And he started speaking Indian. Of course, I didn't understand it from India. And I was like, what? He said, how did you do that? You're a witch. I said, no, I'm not a witch. He said, look. And on the computer, I said, well, is that your computer or something? He said, no. Is this what you said, triangle, the energy coming out? I said, yeah. And I said, yeah, that's it. How'd you do that? He said, I did not do it. You did it. I said, I didn't do it. So Tommy sort of knows,
wow.
You know, I'm shocked. So I don't know how that, you know, in old times we'd call it magic. And I'm sure you probably can't explain it to me any better than he could or him, me. And, you know, we were just in awe. So I've got this thing. It could be a crop circle. It could be something similar to a crop circle, because now I'm looking at it right now, folks. It's acocorp.org, and they're, one of the tabs on there has Ascension Center, and it's a little bitty, but I've got a huge one, and it's that thing. So I'd like to invite you, Paul,
sure.
to see if you could see if your megalithic yard fits
yard,
into
yeah.
that.
Okay, yeah, I would be glad to
Thank
look
you.
At that, and I'll get back to you, and we can discuss that a little bit, and maybe we can, on another show, discuss that a little bit, see what we're finding, but it sounds intriguing, and as far as coincidences go, when there are so many coincidences that add up to something that just is virtually impossible, almost impossible to be, then you've got to start looking at what are the other possibilities other than being a coincidence. And one thing that I tell people, for a lot of the books that are out there, and there's a lot of information on Facebook and what have you, and you can decide which, you know, if you want, if the Galactic Federation is for you or not, and maybe there's another society or a group. But ultimately, if one thinks for themselves, just pay attention and listen and open yourself to what the universe is telling you. Anything is possible. Anything is possible. But very few things are probable. Very few things are likely to happen. Anything can. But
well,
not
I'm still blown
does.
Away from that. I'm just, yeah. I'm like you. I just had a vision in 3D and went, okay, I guess I'm supposed to do this. And I've just been following, I guess you'd say, source, spirit. All I know is I'm a business person, and I've been known as a psychic. Here I am with an ET radio show. I've tried to do a little UFO writing. And now I'm attracting friends that have something like me. It's almost weird. It's like each person that comes on this show has some kind of aha. You know,
yeah.
like, aha,
yeah.
I got you. You think sort of like I do. So we're all almost like building something.
Yeah.
It's almost
that,
like
that, that is,
close
that has been my experience for That has been my experience for 9 years. I'm trying not to lead myself into something
right.
that I want to. I don't believe I'm doing it. I'm allowing whatever to be. And
yeah.
the spirits are with me. It's visual. It's sensual. I recognize it, and I feel the connection and the communication. And I can't explain it other than that's what it is. And there's
yeah.
something else that I haven't talked about on the show at this point. But I do not have faith. I do not believe. I know that there is. A creator, the great architect, whatever one wants to call this higher power. I know that there is because I have experienced it, and I had no intention of it, and I wasn't the only one that experienced it at that time. And that was confirmation for me that I wasn't just seeing things. So I know that there is a greater force. I know that that there's a creator. And once you realize that, then suddenly things that don't seem like they would be possible very well may be. And so when you have this configuration pop up on this computer in India, how could that be? That's just not probable. It's a very, very low probability of happening. But when it does, there's something behind that. It just didn't happen. There's an intent behind that. And whether that's creator's intent or not, there is something behind that happening. And I'm certain that it has an intent behind it. And if it's an intent,
then it is life. That it is life that has created that object on the computer for you to see at that time. I firmly believe that based on what my experience has been over the last few years. This is it's plain as day for me.
Can I ask a question here? Is that why you have hope? Because when you say scientists, you know, this will merge and it, you know, I almost get this sense of a tipping point of too many anomalies, too much information, and then a tipping point in what you're saying, but maybe it's not like that. But you have hope that scientists will be willing to look at that and own that as truth, where a lot of people don't. Is that because of your belief in a great architect?
Well, as far as science goes, I think when scientists recognize the fundamental unit of geometry that is expressed in all energy throughout the universe, I believe that I know what that configuration is. Based on my research, I have yet to find that there's any reason to believe this is not the case. But when the scientists are able to run an experiment and it is testable, in other words, they can get the same results running it over and over and over again, and they come to the conclusion that they've recognized what the fundamental geometry is of the universe, that they will say that science has found this and this is the answer to whatever they decide it's the answer to, but that scientists will lay claim to it. And I'm just saying that that's not true. That scientists want to think that they are the saviors of the 7 billion people that are living on this planet. And they are not, but that's what they believe. And until they can convince themselves of the fundamental geometry that I'm talking about, they're not going to believe it. It's all hocus pocus, and I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, and you're talking about a major shift in what they accept is truth, and of course, we know that that's not their gig, is to be amenable to change easily.
Yeah. Yeah. And they won't change. And I've been frustrated because I've been in a number of discussion groups and so forth, and it's just black and white. There's no middle ground at all on this. So I've kind of given up having a rational discussion with them, even though I can play that game as a scientist, as a geologist, and from an empirical standpoint as an engineer, but they will not listen. You know, it's their way or take the highway. And so I'm left with, that's fine. History is full of people who have experienced something that cannot be coincidence, and is yet it comes up time and time again, and it's associated with geometry and the physics of the universe, and these shamans know it, but they're not obligated to tell everyone. You know, it's up to everyone else to experience and hopefully follow the same path and come to the same realization, and that's the way it was for me. But this has been known for a very long time. But we have to wait for the scientists to catch up. That's really what it's all about. The shamans have known about this for at least tens of thousands of years. We have to wait for the scientists in the next little while to finally come up and catch up to us. But once they do, they'll lay claim and take ownership of it. To me, that's fine. They can do that. I just know better that they didn't discover this. And I didn't discover it. I'm just relaying something that was through my study at the request of a creator I have discovered and have been asked to relay to everyone. That's all I'm doing. I'm the messenger for it. And I'm more than happy to do that for the rest of my life. But in the meantime, the scientists will find it and say they can do all these things with it. So be it. If it helps everyone, if it helps the 7 billion people on this planet, that's great.
Well, you know, the only thing I can prove logically, Paul, to you, is it some kind of geometric figure, and I know that I'm here to help people connect whatever it is they're supposed to know. I know that, and I know it's called the Ascension Center, and I'm holding one in my hand. The bigger one went out even farther than the one that you will be able to see on the logo, but it went out even farther than that. And I don't know what it means. All I remember is the guy told me. He was very analytical and very engineer-like, working there with computers in 89 to 92. I know that the patent for the J.B. Cork went through, and I saw it the other day when Steve on our show, which you heard earlier, was going to help me come up with a, you know, putting together the original executive summary, I guess one would say, in order to create whatever it is that this is going to be. But I said, well, you've got to look at my logo. And I said, but I know that the J.B. Cork logo is out there. I found it. We started looking at the L.A. Times, trying to find my old logo when I took a company, Almost Bridge in public, when I had Psychic Network in Jungle Beach, which was J.B. Cork, and I was the president of Jungle Beach. But I said, you know, the one that I really need to document, and I've been looking for all these years for the people, the engineers, the scientists that can understand geometry. But I never realized it had anything to do with crop circles until I consciously heard the three of you speaking together. Do you understand how it was like something with, oh, my God, like out of Close Encounters or something? You know, remember that Devil's Pyramid where people were doing things stupid, but they didn't know why they were doing it? It was like one of those aha moments for me, you know. I mean, I can't explain what it is. So now I'm going, that's sort of what this is. So were they preparing me or saying, you pay attention to crop circles, or this is the Ascension Center? I just know the words go together and the logo goes together, and that I don't own it because the India didn't create it. I didn't create it. It's got to be extra. I mean, I'm not a witch, okay? And between the two of us, I was like, yeah, how'd you do that? He said, I did not do it. I said, he says, you did it. I said, I didn't do it. I was just sort of describing, you were asking me about a pyramid, and, you know, I was trying to tell him sort of like an Egyptian pyramid, and it just flashed. And he says, we got in a big argument back and forth, and I had one witness, my little Japanese partner in Jungle Beach and J.B. Cork, stand there. Of course, all these people were outside talking to policemen and firemen because the tree was blocking traffic. And here we are in there discussing how could this magic occur and where did this crop circle-looking thing come from, you know? And no, we didn't know. We had no clue. So I still don't have any clue. But I have informed people that have watched me write my, I don't know, downloads, channeling, trying to say I must be from Andromeda or Half Pleiad or so, I don't know. But I knew that I was higher than the Galactic Federation. And I mean, I know that. I know that for these people or the extraterrestrials or these golden personages or all of the above, they seem to be, to me, benevolent and working together. You know, and yet I'm Christ programmed. I'm filtered through the Christ consciousness here in America, born American, and, you know, all of that. So I'm totally into the Lord and the, you know, Christ consciousness, and yet here I have this magic happening, and I just have sort of held on to it, and I knew it had to do. I was supposed to go to UFO Roswell and talk, and I put it off, and then in 87 and 97 with the Phoenix Lights, I knew I was part of that. I was on a truck or talking or dispatching or something. I can't remember now. I just know I was part of the Phoenix Lights, and they let me know. And I know I went and got a tattoo on my hand with the three dots for the triangle pyramids, and I'm part of that. And I have 3D extraterrestrial experiences with these beings that are intelligent and benevolent. And I'm like, what is it? Nobody will tell me. Nobody on Earth, nobody above. I'm just a part of this huge game of life, and I've got Tommy and you and Karen on the phone, and all of you played a part, so I got it. I got, okay, now is the time. Give this to Paul and let him help decipher it. So I don't know if you do crop circle deciphering, but maybe you do.
Well, the only one that I've done, and I submitted my analysis to a website, and they did publish it, was the one crop circle that I referred to earlier that it has precisely this this geometry presented in two dimensions of the sacred sphere, and it was very obvious to me what I was looking at, and so I wrote that up. That's the only one that I've analyzed, but to me that's
can I
that's
mail you one
the
of
most...
these cards? May
sure.
I mail you this?
All right.
Tomorrow I'm gonna. I'll get when we get off the air, or either I'll go to your Facebook, or you can. What if you can Gmail me? I've got a hard copy, which would be good for an analysis. It will have the bigger one, and then within the one that I just made the logo because it was too big for all this energy going out. But it was almost like something extraterrestrial, and I was just the, I guess you say the messenger. I don't know. Maybe I'm the receiver of this thing. But it may have something to do with Karen, the location, Tommy, for deciphering whatever he just said, and we'll have to go back and listen to it. I had to wait till 2012 and you to come on the show and talk about sacred geometry. I mean, you understand this wasn't a coincidence that Karen's here, Tommy's here, you're here. Because I've never in my whole life been able to go, wow, this has something to do with crop circles, and maybe Paul can decipher it. And, I mean, it's just like now I'm like, okay, that's what we're supposed to do. So I mailed this. I've never been – I mean, you realize how long I've been waiting? Like 20 years?